from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum in this morning's edition, the National Rifle Association has filed a lawsuit against the city of Sunnyvale in response to a gun control law passed by voters there in November. The city now requires gun owners to quickly report firearm theft and lock up their guns at home. It also bans possession of magazines that hold more than 10 rounds, and the NRA says the measure violates the Second Amendment. Join us for Forum as we take up the debate. That's next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. A lawsuit by the National Rifle Association and a gun industry trade group was filed yesterday to block the enforcement of the City of Sunnyvale's gun control ordinance, Measure C, which requires gun owners to notify police within 48 hours of the loss or theft of a firearm, as well as to keep firearms locked up when not in the owner's possession. It also mandates that those who sell guns keep the names of the gun buyers for 2 years, and it prohibits ammunition magazines, which hold more than 10 rounds. In this opening Forum Hour, we take up the debate over Measure C and local gun control. And first, we go to the city of Sunnyvale and welcome Mayor Anthony Spitaleri. And Mayor, good to have you with us. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation.
I guess let's begin with the measure passed by about 67%. So as I guess you've said publicly on a number of occasions, you certainly feel the community is behind you here. What is the hope in terms of accomplishing in Sunnyvale? And I particularly ask that question because some of the things like the fact that you you can just drive over to another city where the personal information is not required.
Yeah, it has to start somewhere, and I liken it to the plastic the plastic bag ban. It started in one city, then went to another city, then another city. In Santa Clara County, you know, all of our cities don't have plastic bags anymore. It's got to start somewhere because it's not obviously starting on the federal level.
What do you hope though to accomplish?
I'm hoping to accomplish that, and we've had many inquiries from other cities want to do the same thing. So I'm hoping that we can go from city to city and start passing some sensible gun measures that are going to keep our young children from hurting themselves and other people who own guns be a little bit more responsible for them.
Well, Newton inspired this for you, did it not?
Excuse me?
Newton was the new town.
Absolutely. It made me angry. I mean, I was upset with all the other shootings that we've had around the country on a regular basis. And as you know, we just recently had some more school shootings. But that one made me really angry that young children who should have gone to the next grade this year or enjoy a Christmas this year are not going to be. And that just made me angry. And we had to finally do something. And I was hoping, like everyone else in this country, that Congress would finally take on the NRA and pass some sensible gun measures. And they didn't. And so I felt, well, now it's time for it to be done on the local level. And I believe on the local level we'll get it done. The NRA is afraid of the voters.
Do you think these kind of gun measures will actually halt or be a preventive against the sort of thing that happened in Newtown?
That's a good question, because the one thing about Newtown that I don't know for a fact is we know that the weapons and ammunition that were used were legally bought by the mother, but I don't know if those things were locked up. And I don't know if the young gentleman, broke into a gun cabinet. I don't know those facts. But if those were locked up in a safe, the chances are it probably wouldn't have had the devastating effect that it did.
We're talking to Mayor Anthony Spitaleri, who is the mayor of the city of Sunnyvale, about Measure C. And what about the most controversial, I think, we'll hear from the NRA in this, and we'll also hear from Julie Lefwich from the Law Center to Prevent Gun Violence, but seems to be particularly a lot of controversy about the magazine stipulation that no more than 10 rounds. Why is that so important?
Well, as I understand it, in the state of California, you're not allowed to purchase a magazine for more than 10 rounds. But it's not against the law to possess one. So to me, if you're not allowed to buy it, why should you have one?
So California already bans the sale of magazines that hold more than 10
Right,
words.
And we're just saying that you shouldn't possess them. And there's no law that says you cannot possess them.
And what about the privacy issues and the Second Amendment issues? I mean, because you know, I'm sure that you have heard a good deal of countervailing arguments on both of those.
On the privacy issue around owning a magazine more than 10 rounds?
Well, no, and another element, which is in Measure C.
And you're talking about the registration
Yes. For
buying ammunition. And here's the other issue. In this country, it's against the law for a felon to buy a weapon, but it's not against the law for a felon to buy ammunition. So I look at it as a preventive measure. If you have to go into our local gun store and put down your identification and your thumbprint, a felon may not walk in there and buy ammunition. And our particular measure, that information stays with the shop owner only. Then they can destroy the information in 2 years. The shop owners already have information on gun owners when they purchase a gun. Someone who purchases a weapon has to go in and register it and put all their information down there. So the issue of privacy is a weak one as far as I'm concerned.
Well, there's already been a suit filed by the shop owners, and the NRA suit, which was filed yesterday, I guess the real question is, do you feel fairly safe on constitutional grounds here with respect to the Second Amendment?
I feel very safe on it. We vetted these issues out fairly good. The issue with the NRA is that all they ever say to you when you want to talk about doing something that may prevent some young children from being hurt or committing suicide or weapons being lost or stolen to try and help reduce some of the issues, the first thing out of their mouth is they're going to sue you. So they really don't want to help us resolve some of these issues. They're a bunch of bullies.
It's going to cost the city money, or is this being handled pro bono?
This is being held pro bono. And when we started this campaign, we were getting calls from attorneys and attorney firms and tell us, look, if you get sued, we're ready to step up to the plate and defend it, because they're also tired of what's going on. And I think that some sensible gun measures will start reducing some of the issues that we're facing. It's not going to eliminate crime, and none of these measures are meant to take anyone's rights away from owning a gun. I don't want to pass any constitutional amendment that says you can't legally own a gun. I just want people to be more responsible with them.
Mayor Spitaleri, thank you for joining us.
Glad to have you.
And that's Anthony Spitaleri, mayor of the city of Sunnyvale. Let me tell you who's joining us for the rest of the hour. Chuck Michelle is with us by phone this morning, civil rights attorney and West Coast counsel for the National Rifle Association, author of California Gun Laws. Chuck Michelle, welcome. Do we have Chuck Michelle?
Yes. Hello?
Yeah. Hi. Good morning. Glad to have you.
There we go.
Julie Lefwich is also with us here in studio. She's legal director of the Law Center to Prevent Gun Violence, a San Francisco-based group. Good morning.
Good morning.
And we'll also say good morning, actually, later on. We're going to have somebody else joining us, so I won't say good morning to him now. I will when we have him join us. But, Chuck Michelle, let me go right to you on this. You're asking for an injunction to keep this law from taking an effect. What do you find most, repellent or unconstitutional here?
Well, let me say first, as a former prosecutor and a father, I don't want people thinking that I don't sympathize or that my clients don't sympathize with the victims of violent crime. I dare say I've probably held the hands of more crime victims than the other guests. And I'd also like to point out that there are plenty of programs available from the NRA, the National Shooting Sports Foundation, designed to address child safety issues, safe access issues. There's Project Child Safe, which if the mayor had asked, the associations could have given free gun safety locks to the police department to hand out to Sunnyvale residents. If they'd asked, we could have pointed out how the California State Auditor has recently concluded that because the courts and the hospitals are not doing what the law requires them to do and report people who become prohibited from owning firearms to the DOJ, and the DOJ is not forcing them to do that, the database of prohibited persons in this state is completely inaccurate and very incomplete. The NRA has been trying to get child safety classes passed in this state for years. It always gets voted down and against and lobbied against by groups like LCAV and the Brady Center, because they don't want any implicit acknowledgement of the social utility of firearms. They don't want firearms to be recognized as having social value.
That social value mean, as a former prosecutor, you're saying to, well, inhibit or to actually stop violent criminals?
Guns are used far more often to save lives and deter crime than they are misused by criminals to take lives. That's the reality. They have social utility, whether we like it or not. And the recent school shooting in Arapahoe is perhaps the most poignant example of that of late, because an armed sheriff deputy is the one who stopped that student from lighting his Molotov cocktails and continuing to shoot people in that school. In other words, a good guy with a gun in Arapahoe worked.
Which, forgive me, gets right to the other side of, or another element in this ordinance, which actually points to police officers. I'm talking about the Citadel ordinance now. I mean, it says that police officers are also under this new ban.
Yes, and they don't like it. The Sunnyvale ordinance only exempts.
I'm talking about off-duty police officers. Yeah, because you had mentioned a rapper, and that was an off-duty police officer. But let me get back to my original question here. What do you find most? Because I know that the NRA is trying, and I think I'm characterizing this correctly, to take on these local ordinances, Chicago, D.C., in San Francisco over Proposition H, which the city spent $800,000 on and lost. We heard Mayor Spitaleri say that all of these cities, he wants a lot of cities to follow in line with Sunnyvale. And I guess what the NRA wants to do is to make sure that that doesn't happen.
Well, they don't mind if they do things that make sense, but the Sunnyvale ordinances were not invented in Sunnyvale. Those were taken off the shelf from a gun control lobbying group that's been working across the country to advance its agenda. This is not something that was tailored to Sunnyvale by any stretch of the imagination.
It's the former Mayor Bloomberg's group you're talking about?
Yes. And so there's plenty of money behind the effort to get this pushed, these programs, these particular types of ordinances pushed across the country. And it's not about addressing a crime problem in Sunnyvale or any other city where they're being considered. It's more about advancing an agenda to try and restrain, minimize, box up the Supreme Court's decision in the Heller case and the McDonald case, so that the Second Amendment is not interpreted to any broader than the Mayor Bloomberg's group wants. He's got hundreds of lawyers working to try and minimize the implications from the Heller and McDonald decisions, and he's advancing that agenda across the country in order to try and get the implications of those court decisions to be very limited.
We're talking with Chuck Michel, who is a civil rights attorney and West Coast counsel for the National Rifle Association, author of California Gun Laws. Let me get back to the ammunition magazines holding more than 10 rounds. What's your concern there?
Well, these are the magazines that are overwhelmingly chosen. First of all, they're standard capacity magazines. These are the magazines that come with the firearms when you purchase them, and there's a reason for that. The 10 rounds is an arbitrary limitation that's not really. It basically limits your ability to use a magazine for self-defense or sport. And that's why police choose to have magazines that hold over 10 rounds. You have to consider that when you're using a gun for defensive purposes, you don't have any warning typically. A bad guy gets to prepare, and they'll have multiple magazines and multiple guns and more ammunition than they need. But while you wake up in the middle of the night and now have to unlock your storage box, put the light on, put your glasses on, and figure out how to load the gun while the bad guy's breaking through the window, well, if you only have a 10-round magazine, often that's not enough. We heard the case of the woman down in, I forget the state, where she was up in the attic and shot the guy breaking into her house five times, and he still drove away. The reality is that in those kinds of circumstances, every round is a little lifesaver for somebody who's trying to save the life of themselves or their family.
And again, Chuck Michel is West Coast Counsel for the National Rifle Association, which is challenging the Sunnyvale Measure C provisions in court as a Second Amendment test case, and that was filed yesterday. Julie Lefwich is here in studio with us. She's legal director of the Law Center to Prevent Gun Violence, a San Francisco-based group. And actually, the Sunnyvale measure came out of one that your group had set up as a model, I believe. Isn't that right?
That's right. We've prepared model laws for use by local governments in California on a variety of topics.
And when you hear Chuck Michel say essentially you're violating the rights of gun owners with this and helping bad guys get away with things, you say what?
Well, I have several responses to things that Mr. Michel said. First, about his claim about the great utility of guns in our society. If more guns made us safer, we would be the safest country in the world, and we're not. We are the least safe. We have the weakest gun laws and the highest rate of gun violence in the world. And the NRA, if the NRA cared about victims of crime, it would support universal background checks to help keep guns out of the hands of criminals. Our agenda, if you want to call it that, is to reduce gun violence in this country, which is the same goal of Mayor Bloomberg.
And you believe that the ordinance in Sunnyvale would affect, do that, would succeed in doing that?
These ordinances will certainly help. Large capacity ammunition magazines are the common thread in all of the mass shootings in this country, including the shooting at Newtown and the shooting at 101 California Street, which led to the creation of my organization.
What about the argument that you hear that in cities that have reasonably strong gun control laws, there's still an extraordinary amount of gun violence and gun violence that has not been abated?
Well, guns cross over boundaries between cities and between states easily. So what we need is uniform federal laws. But this Congress is not, at least at this time, willing to do that. So states have needed to step up. And local governments, where they're permitted to adopt local gun laws, such as here in California, are also doing that to fill the void.
And your response to this lawsuit, arguing essentially that you're in violation of the Second Amendment? With these kind of laws?
Those claims are completely without merit, and we're confident that they'll be rejected by the court. A similar Second Amendment claim was rejected by a federal court of appeals in Washington, D.C. in 2011. And the court, the Supreme Court in the Heller case, which was the 2008 case, which held for the first time that there's an individual right for people to have guns, made clear that it's a narrow right. It's the right of responsible, law-abiding citizens to possess a handgun in the home for self-defense. The decision made clear that there's lots of room for common-sense gun laws.
And the magazine, the argument on that score that you shouldn't have guns with magazines that hold more than 10 rounds and not allow the grandfathering of currently owned ammunition magazines. Again, California already bans the sale of ammunition magazines that hold more than 10 rounds, right?
Right. As the mayor indicated, it bans the sale and the manufacture, but not the possession. So these local laws fill the gap there. And there was a gun bill this year by Senator Hancock, which would have banned possession of large-capacity ammunition magazines. That didn't pass, but there are eight other states that banned possession of large-capacity ammunition magazines. So this is not such an unusual concept. In fact, the federal law, there was a federal assault weapons ban and ban on large-capacity ammunition magazines, which was in effect from 1994 to 2004 when it was allowed to expire. And that covered large-capacity ammunition magazines.
But what about banning police officers from having these magazines?
My understanding is that city attorney in Sunnyvale has issued an opinion interpreting the ordinance to allow law enforcement officers, both retired and current officers, to possess large-capacity ammunition magazines.
The American Psychological Association just put out a report, and they said even more than profiling, we need prevention. And you feel that ordinances like this going across the country would really prevent gun violence?
Absolutely.
And based on data, empirical data of any kind?
Well, the record here in California shows how effective gun laws can be. Over the past 20 years, the state of California has adopted more than 30 strong gun laws, and our rate of gun deaths has dropped by 56%. Gun violence dropped nationally, fortunately, but the rate of gun death in California dropped 27% at a higher rate than in the rest of the country. So gun laws do work.
Chuck Michel, let's go to you on that whole note of gun laws working, preventing violence.
Gun laws don't work. Gun control laws don't work. Criminal control laws do work. Our violent rate and our violence rate, gun death rate in California is down since 1993, primarily because 61% of those gun deaths are suicide, and our California suicide rate has gone down four times faster than the rest of the country. Gun control laws don't prevent suicides. Assault weapon bans, so-called, and magazine capacity limitation laws and background checks and those types of things don't stop people from killing themselves. What made the difference in California in the last 20 years is not the 30 or so onerous and ill-conceived firearms gun control laws that have been passed in the name of limiting the right to keep and bear arms, but laws like three strikes and 10-20 life that were passed back in 93 and 94 and started the downward decline of gun deaths in this state. So it's a reduction in suicides, which is not caused by gun control laws, but I don't know what it is that's causing that unusually dramatic reduction of suicides in California. And it's a 10-20 life and criminal control laws that are making the difference here for gun deaths in California. But no study has ever shown. The National Institute for Justice, Obama's own National Institute for Justice, has found that the gun control proposals don't work. The 10-year federal ban on assault on large capacity magazines didn't work. They found that didn't work. And the real reason, and this is what I hope at some point the dialogue turns to, because this is how we can solve the gun violence problem, it's spiked in inner cities, and it's relating to the illegal drug trade and gangs. If we took that out of our gun violence equation in this country, we'd have a lower gun violence rate than most of the countries on this planet. So that's where our problem lies.
Let me get a response from you, Julie Lefwich.
Well, as far as whether or not gun control laws work, the Brady background check bill law, which was passed in 1993, has blocked more than 2 million gun sales to convicted criminals and other prohibited persons. So Mr. Michel is just wrong when he says that gun laws don't work.
But when he says in the inner city, for example, the problem is more gangs and the gangs being criminals, and in other words, we have more of a criminal problem than we have a gun problem, you say what?
Well, we do have a criminal problem, but because of our weak gun laws, criminals are easily able to get a hold of guns.
And let me also ask you about something else in Proposition C, which came up in the conversation with Chuck Michel, and that is what's been characterized as the invasion of privacy, the requirement that gun buyers have to not only keep firearms locked up, but notify police within 48 hours if a firearm is lost or stolen.
Well, as far as the lost or stolen reporting requirement, that's just common sense. Guns are lethal objects. It's important for gun owners to keep track of their weapons and to notify law enforcement if they are stolen. That will make it easier for law enforcement to return weapons to those people. It also helps prevent criminals whose guns are found at a crime scene from claiming that those guns were simply lost or stolen when there's no duty to report
them. The ordinance also includes the names of gun buyers being kept for 2 years and, essentially notifying police not only if a firearm is taken, but keeping firearms locked up. And again, that suggests maybe a little Big Brotherish in many people's minds. And you say what?
I say that a safe storage requirement is really important. Again, guns are used to kill 30,000 people each year in this country. Kids know where their families' guns are kept. School shooters get their guns from home, typically. So it's important that they be locked up.
Again, Julie Lefwich is Legal Director of the Law Center to Prevent Gun Violence. They are a San Francisco-based group, and this is a San Francisco-based radio station. And you can join us whether you're listening on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. Again, the number to call if you'd like to join the conversation, if you have questions or comments, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. Or you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. You're listening to Forum on KQED Public Radio. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. The National Rifle Association filed a lawsuit yesterday against the city of Sunnyvale in response to a gun control law passed by voters there in November. We're talking about, Proposition C and gun control. The city actually now requires, as a result, a Prop C, that gun owners quickly report firearm theft, lock up their guns at home, and it bans possession of magazines that hold more than 10 rounds. The NRA says the measure violates the Second Amendment. We spoke earlier with the mayor of Sunnyvale, and with us for the hour, Chuck Michel, who is West Coast counsel for the NRA and author of California Gun Laws, and Julie Lefwich, who is legal director of the Law Center to Prevent Gun Violence. Let me read some responses here. Bob writes, Measure C also made possession of the more than 10-round magazines illegal. California state law allows for grandfathering of those magazines if you owned it before 2000. Now it's illegal for everybody, including active duty police officers, retired police officers, and people who legally purchased them when they were allowed to do so in, say, 1999. I take issue with the government taking or forcing me to lose property legally purchased with no compensation and or prosecuting me for owning something I've owned for two decades, which prompts me to bring Larry Barsetti into this discussion, retired San Francisco police officer, one of the several plaintiffs in a suit against the San Francisco City for a similar gun ordinance. Larry Barsetti, welcome to Forum.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. So what's your concern and why are you a plaintiff in this?
Well, besides the fact that I feel that it violates my Second Amendment rights also, you must realize that as a 32-year member of the San Francisco Police Department, I know the reality of defending the person. I know that because of a Supreme Court ruling in 2006 and because even the California government code, which does not require law enforcement to provide personal protection to any citizen. So that means that that citizen is responsible for his or her own self-protection. Greg Sir, our chief, has recently said, in defense of Prop C, because he was a proponent, that he feels his officers were at a distinct disadvantage against the criminals who had higher capacity magazines and better weapons than the police have. Well, I share those same feelings, but I also fear for the honest, law-abiding, tax-paying citizen. Why should they be at a disadvantage? Because they are the only ones who will be impacted by these kinds of laws. They are the ones who will be harassed by law enforcement for these kind of laws. And they will be at a disadvantage against the bad guys and the mentally ill who don't care about the law and will always have these weapons.
So your feelings are pretty strong here. I mean, you're being emphatic about the fact that this will not only go against an infringement perhaps where your rights are concerned, but will also be bad for law-abiding citizens.
Absolutely so. When you remember that in a city like San Francisco, which in the daylight has well over a million people in population, both residents and guests, there are more than likely somewhere in the neighborhood of 200 to 300 police officers, and that 300 would be at full staff, and we're not. So how can law enforcement in San Francisco alone, I'm not talking about other places, and they're all in the same boat, many of them worse, how can they provide personal protection for you? We know, as Chuck just mentioned, but everyone knows, in the inner cities especially, where the drug problems and the gangs are huge problems. These guys are armed better than the U.S. Army. In fact, they steal weapons from the U.S. Army, as we know, and other armies worldwide and import them. They can import 20 or 30,000 tons of drugs in the United States every year. What's the problem with bringing in a gun if you want it that badly? Why should I, as an honest citizen of the United States, fear those people if I cannot defend myself or if I'm placed at a dramatic disadvantage in trying to defend myself?
Larry Barsetti, again, is a retired San Francisco police officer, one of several plaintiffs in a suit against San Francisco for a gun ordinance similar to the one in Sunnyvale, which we're discussing. And Officer Barsetti, good to have you with us on Forum this morning. Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
Julie Lefwich, want to respond?
Sure. A couple of things. One, he mentioned that, or he indicated that people have had these magazines for a long time and the government's taking them away. But that's not really the way the ordinances are written. The way they're written is that people have 90 days to remove the magazines from the jurisdiction, to surrender them to law enforcement, or to sell them to a firearms dealer. So it's not as if the government is taking their property without compensation. So that's the first point. As far as this law preventing people from defending themselves in the home, that's just not true. People still are able to have magazines that hold up to 10 rounds of ammunition, and studies have shown that most people that these magazines aren't really appropriate for self defense in the home, which is what we're talking about.
But he was also talking about self defense on the streets.
Right. Well, and most people in California aren't allowed to carry weapons publicly, you know, because of the way our concealed weapons statute is written. Law enforcement officers have discretion as far as who they issue those permits to. So people generally aren't permitted to carry weapons in public in California.
Which means often that the bad guys are the only ones carrying the weapons. I think that would be perhaps the officer's argument.
Right. Well, if more guns made us safer, we would be a lot safer than we are. But this concept of it being an arms race and everybody has to have more guns and higher capacity magazines, what we're seeing is these mass shootings where the shooters are using these large capacity ammunition magazines and allows them to slaughter a lot of people very quickly because they don't need to take the time to reload. And that time to reload can be crucial for victims to escape, for law enforcement to intervene. So you need to look at the reality of how these magazines are being used.
Let me read some of your comments here before we go to your calls. Ron in Fremont writes, I support the mayor and salute him for standing up and doing the right thing. Even though the fight is difficult, he shows true leadership and demonstrates what courageous politicians can do. Beth writes, I am very much pro-Second Amendment, yet I am wondering why it is wrong to expect a firearm owner to quickly report a firearm theft or have a firearm locked up at home if it is not on your person, especially if there are children. And one could still have more than one magazine that holds 10 rounds, can't they? How many firearm crimes are there in Sunnyvale? Do not recall hearing about bad crime stats in that town. Mike writes, the Second Amendment says we can own a gun, but it says nothing about ammunition. There's no right to buy or own ammunition. And Corey writes, guns are more frequently used to prevent violence than are used to commit violence. Is that actually a fact, Michael? Actually, Chuck Michelle, you said that.
Yes, and that's there are 14 or so separate studies that show that firearms are used to save lives 16 to 100 times more often than they are to misused in crime.
With all due respect, Chuck Michelle, there's a lot of conflicting data on that. Different studies reveal different things.
To what extent the number of times the gun is used to prevent crime, how many more times, in other words, the conflict is between 300,000 defensive uses versus several million defensive uses. There's no disagreement that the number of defensive uses outnumbers the number of times that a firearm is misused by a criminal in a crime.
Well, we've got a caller here who's on point, so let me go to him. Alex, that's you. First caller up. Good morning.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I just have a simple point. I guess he earned his law degree. When you exclude police officers, is that number still the same?
I'm not sure if I understand the question. When you exclude police officers,
I heard through the Brady campaign that the opposite of what you're saying is true. When you exclude police officers, a great many more crimes are done. Guns are used violently in a great many more crimes.
No, that's not accurate. That's not accurate. And in fact, this is defensive gun uses where the firearm is often not even fired. That's why there's such variation in the numbers, because firearms 9 times out of 10, when they're used to deter a crime, the trigger is not pulled. That's why we never hear about it in the papers, because there's no actual victim, because the bad guy runs away. But that doesn't take away from the fact that those crimes are thwarted by the fact that there's a good guy or a family member, a family owner, a family, someone trying to protect their family there with a gun, pointing it at the bad guy who then decides he doesn't want to engage. And that is something that's borne out in the 40 states that now have shall issue licenses to carry firearms in public systems, where about 5% of the people actually get one of those licenses to carry a firearm in public. Many of them don't wind up carrying it with them, you know, all day long, because it becomes a bit of a pain, literally. It's like carrying a baseball around all day. But the violent crime rate in those states has gone down dramatically because the criminals don't know who's armed. And, you know, you're not going to go duck hunting when 5% of the ducks might shoot back.
Julie Lefwich, let me have Julie Lefwich weigh in here on this point, if you would.
Well, the studies that Mr. Michelle is referring to are junk science that have repeatedly been discredited. So that's the first point. I think that one of the things that's really important to understand here is that the polling shows strong support for, if we're talking again about large capacity ammunition magazines, strong support for laws prohibiting possession of these dangerous items. Americans are tired of the bloodshed, and they're tired of the NRA's bullying, and they want our elected officials to do something about gun violence in America.
Is there an argument, for example, in Sunnyvale, 67% of people voted for this ordinance, therefore it's democratic in the best sense of the word?
Absolutely. The people wanted it. That's why they voted for it.
Let me bring another caller on here, and that's you. David, good morning.
Good morning. I'm siding with Mr. Michel on this particular issue. I can tell you as a federal law enforcement officer that I'm not really concerned with law-abiding citizens having firearms. The lion's share of the firearms that we seize when we're out doing dangerous police work are seized from gang members and drug dealers, as an example, and those generally tend to be straw purchases. They're straw purchases of criminals that haven't been captured into the system yet, who are buying weapons and supplying their cohorts in crime with weapons. To actively go about disarming the American public or restricting already really restrictive laws in the state of California is really a red herring. It doesn't really go towards the real issue of gun violence. Gun violence is committed by criminals in the system or not yet identified, and by people that, which we've seen recently with these mass shootings, individuals that have psychological issues. And to another point, these other distracting activities done by police departments where they do these gun buyback programs, they don't have any impact whatsoever on gun violence. They're generally people that have weapons for a long time, have no use for them, and turn them in. Statistically, in order to save a life from a gun buyback program, you have to take 10,000 guns off the street in a community to save one life. So I see all of this discussion about what the American people want and don't want as really a huge distraction. It's probably split up the middle. And if you were to really break this down into what the gun violence really is, it's a function of criminal gangs. Depending on where you are, they could be criminal alien gangs or they could be homegrown criminal gangs. It's an inner city issue. Most of the statistical violence, gun deaths, come out of the inner city. And if the focuses are made there, then you're going to have significant changes. If you look at D.C. as an example, D.C. had an all-out gun ban, and there was more violence there, and D.C. was the murder capital of the United States several years in a row. So how does the other person here in this debate address what D.C. crime violence was?
Well, I raised that before, David, and I'll raise it again with you, Julie Lefwich. It keeps coming back, the argument that it's really crime that has to be combated here, and D.C. is an example of a place that had pretty strong gun control.
That's true, but it's surrounded by states that don't have strong gun laws, and our borders are porous, and it's very easy for guns to be brought in from other states. In fact, studies have shown that guns flow from states with weak gun laws into states with strong gun laws, which only makes sense. It's easier to buy guns if the laws are weak.
And you would say what to the whole sense of buying back guns that the caller brought up, cities, for example, that have gun buybacks?
I would say that if cities want to use their resources that way, I understand that some of them do and feel that it's effective. As an organization, we promote other policy options, and we tend to go for laws rather than buyback programs.
I'm going to bring another caller on. That's Michael. Good morning.
Good morning. First, a comment about the Army. I thought it was sort of funny, the idea the Army can't control their own guns, so we should have less gun control because of that. If the professionals like the Army can't control their guns, that's just concerning. But I'm not totally anti-gun. I get that a big part of the debate that's missing is that there's no conversation between the difference between rural and urban guns, and that's a big deal. But the Second Amendment was written when it took about a minute to a minute and a half to load a gun, so it's completely archaic. And I'm just wondering this weird childlike sense of entitlement for the pro-gun or anti-gun control people. They're like, I really enjoy my toys and playing with them in my backyard. So it seems to me it's like I'm okay with dead children as long as I get my toys. It seems really entitled because gun control classes for children it's not going to stop an insane person from getting a gun. And if they can only find a sword, there's going to be a lot less death. So what do the people that are anti-gun control say in regards to that? The Second Amendment's completely archaic. They're not defending 10 rounds, let alone 100 or 1,000 rounds.
No, we're talking about muskets back then and all. Chuck Michelle.
Well, there are 300 million guns in this country. Criminals get them typically by stealing them. There's a thriving black market. There's 3,000 guns sold every day in the state of California. So I think people need to, and by the way, here's the junk science. After being commissioned by the president to study gun violence, the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, found that guns are used more often to save a life than to kill, with estimates of annual defensive gun uses ranging from 500,000 to more than 3 million per year. Now, we have 30,000 gun deaths per year in this country. 61% of them are suicides. That's a different discussion. So that means there's multiple times more often where a gun is used to save a life than to take one. But people also need to come to terms with the fact that this is a constitutional civil right. This is not a matter of people wanting their toys. This is people wanting to make a choice for themselves about what the most effective means for defending themselves or their family is, and have the right to choose to buy a gun for that purpose if they want to. It's not about having to own one. It's not about using one for sport. Self-defense is the core of the Second Amendment, as the Supreme Court has said. So there may be other civil rights issues that folks don't like, you know, that people voted against the Defense of Marriage Act. But that doesn't mean, they voted for the Defense of Marriage Act. That doesn't mean that the courts don't strike down those kinds of restrictions on civil rights, which the Second Amendment creates.
Let me get a response from you, if I may, Chuck Michelle, to an email from a listener named Dennis, since you mentioned Second Amendment rights. He writes, since when is the NRA in charge of constitutional rights? Just over 100 years ago, the Supreme Court agreed that citizens could not shout fire in crowded theaters. These occurrences caused many stampede deaths and tragedies in many ways not that unsimilar to the massive shooting events today. Amazing though it seems, the Supreme Court placed a common sense limit on the First Amendment to protect abuse and ensure safety of all. The NRA has a place in our society. They should get back to focusing on gun safety and education where they began. But the NRA cannot and should not be the ultimate arbiter of all things guns. It is unrealistic for a non-NGO lobby to claim higher constitutional rights than those of us who just ask for common sense safety and are not gun buyers or users.
Well, I think that's a bit of a confused question. And the NRA is not the arbitrator of constitutional rights. The United States Supreme Court is. The NRA makes policy arguments, and about 20% of its budget is political. The other 80% is spent on firearm safety programs and teaching people to use guns safely, to shoot guns straightly, and a lot of that is law enforcement training. So the vast majority of NRA's budget is not for political lobbying or policy advocacy. But the courts are the places where these ultimate decisions about what the scope of the Second Amendment is are being decided. And the writer is correct that there's no such thing as an absolute fundamental right in the First Amendment context or any other context. And what's being fought right now in the courts is where the line is going to be drawn on the Second Amendment, and that is what the Sunnyvale lawsuit is really all about. Exactly how far can governments go in infringing on the right to keep and bear arms? There will be policy arguments made in that case about whether or not these magazines have social utility and value as self-defense tools, and we're quite confident that we can convince this court that they do.
And here, Julie Lefwich, is a comment from a listener named Colin on our Facebook page. He says, criminals don't care about the law, period. These so-called gun laws only serve to truncate the ability of law-abiding citizens to defend themselves. Ms. Lefwich is wrong. She cites studies in the face of officers who have seen it firsthand for over 30 years. I'm a lifelong Democrat, but I don't believe in gun laws. They're just not logical.
Well, again, I would say that the Brady background check law has prevented 2 million criminals from buying guns. And just to get back to the NRA, the American public, 90% of the American public supports universal background check. That is huge. 80% of all gun owners support universal background checks, and 70% of NRA members. So for the NRA leadership to come out in opposition to universal background checks, which would be the most fundamental improvement of our federal gun laws, shows that the NRA leadership doesn't represent America, doesn't represent gun owners, and doesn't even represent its own members.
Let me read an email from another listener named Frank, who writes, "The gun conversation has reached a dead end. Anyone paying attention can repeat every soundbite of the arguments for and against. Instead of focusing on studies, the Second Amendment, large or small clips, carry laws, self-defense, gun deaths, etc., we need a new frame for the conversation. Here's the new frame. Common sense tells us that guns in the modern urban digital age do not make sense. We change the frame on cigarettes. We can change it on guns." Another caller on, Shabazz. Good morning.
Good morning. How you doing? You know, I can't help but think that when both sides, the pro-gun and the anti-gun people, use the word criminal, the image that pops up into everybody's mind is someone from the African-American community, because that's where most of the gun violence is committed. People are not born criminal. Criminals are not born. Criminals are made, and they are product of the influences. I say this, I'm not a scientist, but I say this because I've been dealing with this issue for years and years and years, and I see, and I go in and out of the community, and I see what kind of music people listen to that glorify guns, that glorify violence. I go inside people's homes, and I see what kind of videos and movies that they're watching, and they're looking at movies and videos that where black on black crime is committed. So I would think that the NRA and those people who are opposed to the NRA, if they change the argument from the Second Amendment, because that kind of argument can go on for generations and never be solved. But if they would change the argument to the influences that come into these communities and create the criminal sect, not only would they solve this issue about guns, because guns don't kill, people kill. And people are influenced to kill. That's a fact.
Shabazz is raising a whole question, I think, here of racism and poverty tied to racism. And Chuck Michel, you've been identified as a civil rights attorney, so why not put more emphasis there instead of putting emphasis on protecting gun rights?
Well, that's a kind of a loaded question. The first of all,
well, we're talking about loaded guns, so you understand.
Yeah, guns are. I mean, gangs are organized by race. I mean, that's a fact. But the African American gangs have no monopoly on gun violence. This is a complex social problem, which really you're not going to solve it by passing laws that try and get guns away from gang members, because they get the guns anyway. Now, how are you going to solve that problem? That's not really a civil rights question. That might be a sociology question. It's a good one, and it's something that we should be having a discussion about. But no amount of gun control laws is going to stop that gang violence. Maybe there needs to be a revision to the drug law policies in this country. There's a good discussion to have about whether or not those bans are working. Is that prohibition accomplishing anything? Typically, prohibition, whether it's alcohol, drugs, or guns, doesn't work, and it's not working. So maybe we should start there.
Well, here's a comment from a listener, again, on our Facebook page. Listener's name is Christina, and she writes, "Follow the money, please, for the truth in this matter. The NRA has bamboozled the public with propaganda. If they cared about the public's safety, why would they oppose background checks? Someone is making a lot of money by allowing weapons to stream into poor urban areas, especially with gun shows being held right next to public housing. I do believe that racism is also part of this equation, but no one is talking about it. The media doesn't cover all the gun killings in San Francisco public housing." You say what, Chuck Michel?
Boy, I don't know where to begin with that one. There's an awful lot of statements in there.
Let me begin with the first statement there. I mean, why oppose background checks?
No one does.
The NRA has. I mean, that's why it didn't get through the U.S. Congress.
No, NRA has opposed specific bills. After the Virginia Tech shooting, NRA supported the Nixon Improvement Act, which expanded background checks and expanded the databases. The problem is that often background checks are used as a ruse to get to universal gun registration, and they're used as a way to make it difficult in many situations to transfer firearms at all, when it's a family member to a family member, or a farmer in a rural community to to selling his hunting gun to his neighbor. I mean, those are the kinds of things that bog the question down. But there's no way of knowing what percentage of people, and especially what percentage of NRA members, because none of the people who are taking these polls know, not an NRA member. That list is not a public information. No one knows what degree people support this concept until you actually put some meat on the bones of the concept. That's where the trouble lies, in what exactly those background check laws do and don't allow.
Let me go to Julie Lefwich again, Julie.
I don't know what to say to that. And I see that we're getting to be towards the end of our time. I was just thinking that I really applaud the Sunnyvale voters for standing up to the NRA. And I think it's great that the mayor is willing to do that also. And we were very pleased that we were able to secure pro bono help for the city, especially since Newtown, and because of the way our organization was formed, which was at a shooting at a law firm, lawyers have been approaching us from all over the country and asking to do whatever they can. So those were kind of my final thoughts, not necessarily a direct response to what Chuck was saying, so I can provide something more specific if you like.
Well, in all fairness, we should say we're getting a lot of emails, a lot of web postings that are praising the mayor of Sunnyvale and this ordinance. And we're getting emails that are off on an interesting different track or two. Ted, for example, writes, stop and frisk is the only effective way of forcing enforcing gun-free zones, and I hope its use spreads throughout the country. But what we really have here is a kind of battle between those who would like, on your side, Julie, more gun control laws, starting in local ordinances like this, spreading across the country, and Chuck Michel and the NRA wanting to stop them, as is a characteristic of this lawsuit. So you may want to continue this discussion and debate on our website, kqed.org/forum, or on our Facebook page. But let me take this opportunity to thank our guests for being with us. Julie Lefwich, again, is legal director of the Law Center to Prevent Gun Violence, and Chuck Michel is civil rights attorney and West Coast counsel for the National Rifle Association, author of California Gun Laws. We also spoke with the mayor of Sunnyvale and with Larry Barsetti, from the retired member of the San Francisco Police Department. And we are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeat of 10 to 11 in the evening. We're going to have the creator of Dilbert with us the next hour, shift gears to put it mildly. But let me remind you who is behind the scenes here. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Our engineer is Jim Bennett. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from Chad McClymans. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. For all of us here at KQED Public Radio, thank you for listening. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.